A warm welcome to the Carmen Murray Show. I am so excited and so grateful that we got to host our first Conscious Leaders Meet and Learn with an amazing panel and also with an amazing audience that brought this conversation around the role of women in leadership to life. Our panelists that gave up their mornings for the day was Frans van der Kolff, who facilitated an incredible panel with his beautiful gift of storytelling. And then also Kanisa Peek with her wisdom as an economist, but also as an advisory board member of Conscious Leaders. And then to the Youth Collaborative, who we recently appointed, one of the members, Saviko Kanyoka, joined into this conversation, who's also so passionate about women in leadership. And then hosted by the phenomenal Bongi Kunene with her charisma and her way of telling stories and just getting the audience on the go. It was just such an incredible experience. Now, I want to thank our sponsors from the bottom of our heart. First of all, Workshop 17 was so open up to our vision and where we want to take Conscious Leaders and these networking events and how we want to make it an educational experience. More importantly, this is a venue that is known as a place where ideas get to grow. And wow, did we experience that, because the space just lends itself for open conversations and you almost feel the psychological safety. And we were able to provide the psychological safety, but also be in an environment where we felt safe. So thank you so much for that. And then also to Solid Gold Podcast Studios, who recorded the conversation in order for us to bring the learnings to you beyond borders. This is one thing that we're passionate about, is that we don't want to limit learning experiences. So we're bringing this to you so that you can listen to it if you were in the audience, to actually listen to it again and take those notes. But also, it's a different experience, but you get to have a little bit of the live experience. Just for transparency, we did close off this session with a Q&A, but we did not include the Q&A because this is a psychological safe space that we're trying to create, and we just didn't want to bring those intimate questions on air. So if I may ask, if you bring in your conversations, please bring them in and know that they are always kept within a safe space when we host these live events. And now I am going to hand you over to the phenomenal and the amazing and incredible charismatic woman that I aspire to be. She is just such a firecracker, is Bongi Kunene. Over to you. And she, by the way, is also part of our Youth Collaborative. Thank you so much.
How's everyone doing today? Good, good. Can sit down, ladies.
Sorry,
Yeah. Okay, good morning, officially, everyone. I'd like for us to take a moment and give ourselves a round of applause. You guys look very, very beautiful, I must say. My name is Bongi, and I am a proud member of the Conscious Leaders Youth Collaborative. And today I'm very excited to be here and host you guys. We're going to have a very important and talk about a very important topic today. So I urge all of us to be very engaging, to be part of the movement. And whether you're here to have fun, whether you're here to learn, we're here to actually embrace women. Okay. But like any other household, we do have a bit of house rules. I'm not going to be strict to you. Okay. Let's talk about the bathroom first. It's over around the corner there. And the most important one is, I need you to be as engaging as possible. And how do you do that? You take pictures, you post it on our social media platforms, you're going to go on LinkedIn, we are Conscious Leaders. You're also going to go on Instagram, conscious_leaders. If I were you, I'd be doing a reel. How the yep. How the event started, how it's going, and how it ended. Hopefully you'll win a prize, because I have amazing prizes for you. So the more engaging, the more you add it on these social media platforms, the higher the chances for you to get a prize. So let's do this, right? Okay. Now I'm going to invite one of the most amazing people that have started this. Why are we here, right? Why are we all sitting here? Why are we not at work? Why are we sitting here? We need to understand conscious leaders, the history, where it comes from, the vision. Why are we passionate about women empowerment? And who else that can explain it better than the most amazing, audacious, powerful, amazing woman I've ever met? It's Carmen. Can you please help me?
Can we just give her a round of applause? Like, seriously? I'm so excited. So I'm yes. I know, but I don't know if it's for recording purposes. It's for recording purposes. I'm so sorry, but listen, I've got the loudest voice. When I started with podcasting, right, 6 years ago, it was so funny because I have the loudest laugh. So then it's like the mic, and then Gavin used to say, move your head backwards every time you laugh and then come back to the mic. And listen, I just can't do that. And sometimes when you see that, I just look up and I just laugh. It's still loud. Anyway, first of all, thank you to each one of you for coming to our first breakfast meet and learn. We are super excited about it. We said we start with 3 people, we start with 10, we build the ark, they will come. I don't care about the quantities, I'm over that. Because all we want to do is smash up rooms and have it full of people, no meaningful conversations, and then we have conversations to try and please the people in the room. And we're not having real heart-to-hearts. And I want us to have real conversations, head and heart, as to how we can make an impact, not just in women empowerment, but in the world. You know, conscious leaders, and I want to be able to have authentic conversations. And every time when I talk about spiritual awakening, the men go. And I'm like, no, you should be part of this conversation. This is important. So what happened was, I'm fully embedded in a midlife crisis. Fully embedded. And yes, everything that could go wrong went wrong. Now, I've always been a strong and independent woman. I got my things to do, and I'm always proud and out and doing my thing. But during this midlife crisis where everything went wrong, I experienced what they call a creative illness, where I just didn't connect to my work, didn't connect because I have been trailblazing in marketing my entire career. And just one day I woke up and I said, I don't like marketing anymore. Don't like the way it's being done. I don't like what it's doing to the environment. I don't like the exploitation of consumerism, the greenwashing, all of that. It's not sitting well with me. And then I studied numerology, and I became a numerologist. And that was like a 2-year process. And I did my PGDIP at Henley Business School. So a lot of multifaceted knowledge data points coming in, but the spiritual awakening happens. And I'm like, I need somebody to talk to. And I woke up one day feeling like the loneliest person ever because I didn't have a sisterhood. And I didn't have the conversations where I could actually speak what's really going on without being really authentic and very honest about what I'm going through. And I think for me it was like, okay, but what are you going to do about it? You know, do something about it. So it was last year. So I've always been on global stages and talking and doing keynotes. I talk a lot though, so I need a timer. but for me, it was more important to say, okay, right, I've done all of these things, but I don't see enough women doing the same thing. That bothers me because the stages are always like 90%, and I call it out, and I might upset people, but I call it out because I don't see diversity in panels. And if that's not happening, what is happening in boardrooms? What is happening at a higher level? Because from boardrooms to living rooms, we need to start driving an impact. So the whole thing for me was, okay, I love conscious leadership, very passionate about it, and also because I'm a sensitive, on the other side, which makes that a whole new dilemma. I was like, okay, how are we going to do this? We're going to launch Conscious Leaders on the 29th of January, 2024, because I chose the numbers. And I was like, I don't care if it's 5 people, 10 people, this is a community that I'm creating because this is the community I missed and that I didn't have, and hopefully something will come from it. And this is where it all began. We started off from 500 women, I think, in the first month, corporate women. And today we have over 3,500 corporate women on our database. We have so many incredible things that's happening out of this community. We have an advisory board.
That we've appointed. So we don't just make decisions based on what Carmen has to say. It's based on what everybody else has to say and representing the cultural touch points of women, their creative illnesses, their midlife crises, their career challenges, but also looking at the potential of fortifying women so that they can become resilient in all aspects of their lives, right? And then as time went by, I was like, hang on. There's a lot of generational gatekeeping happening. And it's a big problem. So I went to my mom and I said, Mom, I'm going through perimenopause. What was your menopause like? And she was like, no, it was just menopause. I said, well, how old were you? 33. It's 33. You had a hysterectomy. Like, oh my gosh, why did I not know that? And these pivotal conversations are not happening between generations. And what we're also seeing in boardrooms, especially, is like, I had to work so hard to be where I'm at now. I'm sorry, I can't bring you along with me. You've got to put in the same work. And the younger generation, we refer to them and we go, ah, future generation, because God's so much hope. You know what we're doing there? And I've been guilty of that, is we're gatekeeping. We're basically saying, hey, younger generation, I've got this. You just hang on, your time will come. And we got to stop that. So I woke up one day and I was like, okay, we're going to stop this. We're going to have a youth collaborative. And we put out, and we've got 10 amazing women. And we said, okay, right, we start small, but we're going to create opportunities for women just not just to be on the podcast. They're starting their own webinar series. So they're going to start talking about things that's on their hearts, what they're seeing in their generation. And they're going to teach us a thing or two about what we need to change and how we can work together with them. So this thing has really just started to become like a little movement that's really expanding. And my dream for it is to take it global and to shine a spotlight on African women and take it across the world. In the past year, the podcast now has charted in 22 countries. It's really doing well. We've been approached by so many brands. We're doing a boardroom experience for 12 women where they're going to have a sustainable tour. They're going to go out and they're going to have dialogues about what's happening, what change needs to happen, and challenges that they face as women. And then we're also going to do a drive around a track with some serious power, so that we can practice that in real life. And then there's also, we're doing things like, our ESG webinar series, because we really want to drive awareness around consciousness. We're seeing conscious capitalism is becoming so vital and important. It's not just the consciousness of me. It's how am I going to be audacious inside and out? How am I going to make bold decisions? And that's going to impact the future generations. And I think that there's so much work that we need to do in understanding sustainability. And we, as women, hold a lot of power in our hands. But there's a lot of, what is the word, cognitive dissonance when it comes to our voting power. Power of the wallet. And I mean, here we're going to have open conversations, right? Tampons, the other day, they found a metal in tampons that is actually giving women health issues and health problems. There's no transparency around that. Women's health is not taken seriously. Those conversations we need to have. Why are we still buying these products? We don't need to buy things that if it's not good for the environment. And we need to start asking a lot more questions. And this is kind of the community that I'm trying to create, is where we can openly speak about things or think. Authenticity is very important, which brings me to my last point. But authenticity for me is, I've always been authentic. And the reason I'm very authentic is probably because I've got ADHD and autism. So it's working in my favor. So autism, I've got sensory overload. So I pick up, I'm hypersensitive, from fabric to conversations. So you can just imagine when I walk into a crowded room, how much is happening with me. However, I have different belief systems. I'm starting to wonder if there's a lot of other things that I'm worried about. This cannot be sensory overload. This is something else. But anyway, but because of that, I process information much slower. So I can't always say, okay, right, I can be off the wheel and I can have a conversation, you know, go deep with you. I want to speak about this specific thing and I have so much to say about this thing, but it's important for me also to be self-aware and to learn when things are appropriate to say and when they're not. And that's my challenge that I have to deal with. But it also allows me to be very authentic. And I love that about myself, is that I can be that person. So I was like, okay, what is authenticity really then? And authenticity, I built a model around it. I believe that authentic intelligence is the one thing that we need to build a resilient future, to be the catalyst of change. If we want to bring change in the world, we need to develop our authentic intelligence. As the whole world is geeking out about artificial intelligence, we should be geeking out about authentic intelligence, right? And what is happening is that we have lost that sense. Everything is starting to become way too artificial. And we need to come back to the human potential of who we are so that we can work hand in hand with machines so we can solve complex problems. But what is it that we need to develop? And that's what the whole framework of conscious leaders is all about, is, I hope I can remember them all, is the three C's, which is creative intelligence, cultural intelligence, collective intelligence, learning intelligence, foresight intelligence, emotional intelligence, and spiritual intelligence. And the one that's always missing is spiritual intelligence. And the reason we need that is because spiritual intelligence doesn't just teach us about purpose. It teaches us about interconnectedness and how everything is interconnected. The universe constitutes out of two opposites, as above, so below, as within, so without, positive, negative. So that's where authentic intelligence was born, having the understanding that everything has a direct opposite. And I implore you in your day-to-day, if you want to be a good critical thinker, when a thought comes into your head, always think, what is the opposite to that? Because there's an answer in both. Anyway, that is me. I am very excited to hand over to Bongi. I put her on the spot. I said to her, I want you to open with a talk. She's very dynamic from Youth Collaborative. She's also, you're also doing an MBA, right? Very brave. I don't think that that's something that I'm going to do in the near future, but one day. But I think it's so powerful to see the younger generation really stepping up and wanting to make a difference. And we had a conversation on the phone where she said to me, geez, like, Carmen, you know, we're talking about the role of women in leadership, but I have so many different things that I'm facing, which you'll talk to you about. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, we need this context. We need to have this conversation. So without further ado, and I just want to first of all say thank you to Solid Gold Podcast Studios for recording the podcast while we're here. Workshop 17 for the venue. And then for my team that's helping with the content behind the scenes, thank you so much. And over to you.
Thank you very much, Carmen. Thank you very, very much. Thinking of the role of women in leadership, right? I'm going to do a quick study just to give you a snapshot of how it feels like, or what I think, my thought process about it, right? How many of you in this room, by show of hands, have ever been put in a situation where you feel very, very nervous and uncomfortable? Just by show of hands. 99% of all of us know that feeling. And I want you to associate that feeling with how I see women in leadership in a lesbian perspective, right? I ask you because growing up, the dream for me was to take over the world, right? Go and break the boundaries, break the rules, rewrite the rules, right? Because a common person would think a woman in leadership is a girly girl in a dress, potentially white some of the times, right? But not necessarily a bongi. I'm not in a dress. I'm black as they come. And I'm female. So I'm sitting here with three things that are pushing me on the far end of the unfavorable side. And having to actually go through this journey, I've faced challenges, and I continuously face these challenges. Of, for instance, walking in a boardroom. I work in an insurance space, right? Highly male-dominant, white male-dominant industry. And here comes the short lesbian woman walking in the boardroom with great ideas that could potentially change the narrative and actually change how business and strategies are being done. But because of how I look on its own, it's negative, right? Whatever I'm going to say in that boardroom is, one, going to be ignored, underplayed or underestimated, Or the worst one is you say something and a person is Googling or asking someone else to prove that you're actually saying the right thing. You have judgments, right? One thing every day when I wake up and I go into a new environment, either it's a networking environment or actually going to do a sales or getting new clients, I'm constantly worried. Oh, what's the spiritual alignment there? Ah, oh, what's the organizational culture there? Oh, how are they going to take me? And every day I told myself, you have to go in these boardrooms and actually break the cycle of judgment, of unconscious bias, right? And today's topic really resonates with me because away from the challenges, I have saw and tried to change them into a strength, right? I started researching and Googling and understanding organizational cultures and inclusivity of people like Bongi, right? And I came across a very interesting study to say organizations that embrace or actually take time to look into diversity actually tend to strive and produce more results, either on an effectiveness level, either on a healthy organizational culture, as well as profitability, obviously. And one thing that really hit hard by being Bongi, right? I remember this time very, very well. Because it really hits hard to say, as much as the world is moving into understanding the LGBTQR environment, but some people are still stuck in their ways, right? I went for an interview. Thank God I didn't get that job, by the way. Because, wow. Right? Went for an interview. There I am, ready, ready, ready to take over the world. I'm ready to blow her mind off. Walk in the boardroom. She's sitting there, and she looks at me. And she says, can we take a moment? I want to pray for you.
No.
And obviously, that interview didn't go well, right? Because from there, I was just giving her punchbacks. Yeah, right? You're looking for, I'm better than that. But just to see that the world is just, we are moving, but it's stagnant, right? So I want you today, whenever you're sitting in a boardroom and you see someone coming in, looking different, please make that uncomfortable feeling that I just asked you about, make them feel comfortable. Because as much as you know that we women, we hear leadership, but how does it actually feel being a black, lesbian woman trying to make change? And I promise myself to say, if we have a youth that is coming behind me, I need to clear the path for them. And today I say, let us be people in industry of speech. I know I'm sitting with leaders here, right? And you're gonna have to embrace diversity. We are moving in a world where there's these they, thou, them, she, shall, whoever pronouns, right? Still don't understand it, but I'm open-minded to it, right? But you're gonna lead those people. And what culture are you gonna put in place to leading those people, right? And if you're gonna say you're gonna shy away from it, then don't be in business. Don't be a leader. No offense. Because the truth of the matter is the world is moving in that direction. So food for thought. What are you going to do when you go back to the office to restructure the culture and actually make it an inclusive place for us and the they, thou, shall, them to be comfortable? And yeah, without any further ado, I can go on for the whole day, right? Because I'm very passionate about inclusivity. But I think this topic then is open for the panelists who will then dig deep. And remember, we're all diverse. We'll probably learn something different from the panelists themselves. And I will introduce them individually. We're going to obviously start with our facilitator, Frans van der Kloof, who is an African storyteller, amazing, business strategist and a mentor at the Henley Business School, who's passionate about developing young African entrepreneurs. Can we all just give him a round of applause? You might take a seat, sir. Now remember, ladies and gentlemen, please, hashtag conscious leaders. Let's go to the social media platforms. I'll also then open it to Kanyisa Pika, an economist and advocate for women empowerment. I love that. With 12 years experience at advertising executives and navigating complex markets. Thank you, Kanyisa. Round of applause. Z, Nice. An associate director at Play Africa, and she's focused on the youth empowerment and creating inclusive spaces for growth. Thank you. Please come through a round of applause. And obviously, the amazing, amazing, audacious Carmen Murray. Thank you. Okay, so we will then hand over to you guys and educate us. What are your thoughts on this topic that is very important that some of us think about but never really take time to dwell and analyze and actually dissect it? So I will hand over to the facilitator to
thank you so much. And good to be here and nice to meet you all. I just want to share something from my before I hand over, and I'm not going to do a lot of talking because we have to, and I'm the male, obviously, and at that, an aging white male, so, you know, the type that really gives us most of the problems. But I just want to share, I come from a retail background, so I grew up in a place called Pick and Pay. I'm sure most of you know that place. And, of course, I firstly, at some stage, I was a buyer, and I bought groceries and perishables for hypermarkets, based at Boksburg Hypermarket, and I employed two women trainee managers, and there was an outcry. France is destroying our place, and how could you possibly bring women into retail? It doesn't fit. It doesn't work. Sasanda and Janine, I will never forget, and I brought them in, and we had the conversation about how difficult it was going to be, but they outperformed the men by far. They worked exceptionally well, they understood it, but they brought a different element of leadership into that retail environment that was so welcome and so well received by all. The merchandisers on the floor would say, "Where's Sasanda and Janine? We want to be with Sasanda and Janine, we want to work with them." So that was the one example. But I was called in by another senior manager who said to me, "Franz, we know you're ambitious and you're messing up here, hey? You must understand." So that is the sort of thing we worked with at some stage. And then I want to tell you that, you know, on our continent, and this is a magnificent continent, I am blessed that I am on this continent. On our continent, in the year 2050, we will have 1 out of 3 youths in the world will be African. Now, this could be a brilliant story because it could work. And if everybody has meaning and purpose and they're enjoying what they're doing, it will be wonderful. But if we have 60% unemployment, we're going to be in trouble. We can only fix this through women leadership. And I talk from the experience and what I have experienced and how I have seen it. So we need women to lead us into this future and to ensure that we have meaning and purpose. And that 2050 is the year where Africa will be shine and it will be the continent of the world, which it can be. So we need that. So just as a little bit of background, that's where I come from. That's why I do. Two weeks ago, I had a class at Wits Business School of 50 postgraduate students, all women, for leadership. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I learned so much, and it was so rewarding. I hope they learned too. But we had these great experiences and just that rich African conversation that makes it all so worthwhile. Eh? So, your thoughts.
Thank you and good morning, everyone. So I think, you know, women in their nature are leaders, and it's because of societal norms that has kind of created these barriers that make women, especially when you live in a patriarchal system, women are always at the back foot, but they lead at the back. And so if you think about how corporate was also designed by a man, I mean, if you think about the economic system that we're using, by Ben Bernanke, also created by a man who, you know, a white man at the time, women were stay-at-home parents. And when you think about the work that women have added, the value to society, staying at home meant that you were nourishing and nurturing future generations, right? So that kind of work, unfortunately, to this day, is still related as unpaid care work, right? And so I think that's the disadvantage that women will get, because when you think about, yes, we fought for women to you know, get educated. And we've done brilliantly, even in South Africa. Women have outpaced men in terms of their ability to get qualified in education. But when they get to the workplace, there is some sort of resistance because still that care work someone has to do, right? Whether you're caring for young children or caring for old aged people, it's ideally, or rather it's more women who do that type of work still to this day. So when you think about, is corporate a nice place or is it encouraging? Why do we have a JSE top 40 with at least one woman out of 50 men in leadership? That ratio is not by chance, by the way, because societal norms are still that women should take care of the family and men should work. And with that, I think as women raise their hands that we do want to do this, I think organizational structures need to also come to the party and kind of change the environment for women. There's plenty of examples that we can share. For example, another lady who shared with me where I work, and she said, when I joined this organization, we could only plug the computer, nothing else. Can't charge your phone or anything else. I suppose this was still in the early 1990s. And she was also in menopausal age. She was like, I can't work like this. There were not really air conditioners in those days. And they rallied to say, we can't go outside almost like we're smokers to freshen up. Like, you kind of have to give us an ability to plug a fan in our workstations at least, because that gives you air. But generally a man wouldn't have thought of that and put it in a policy. So you need women in leadership because they bring that perspective that provides an environment where people can thrive. Ultimately, a leader is supposed to create an environment where people can feel their authentic self, but also bring in their best self, right? To be able to solve the big problems, ask the right questions, and be valued in the contribution that they make.
Wow, that's so important, and that's that valued, eh? It's that belonging and the valued that becomes so important. I just want to touch on something, and I said I won't talk a lot, but and I'm going to hand over to you now. But you know, I'm doing some research on, and it's difficult. You know, African history is difficult to read because mostly it's written by white men who wants to write it as they want to see it. So it, and you know, the egos. So it is that difficult to read, but you find the authentically written pieces. And what I am finding is that before slavery and colonialism, there was a fairly equal society in Africa. If you look at the old kingdom of Kush, women looked after finance, legal stuff, property, all the important things. So there was an important rule and a role. And you know, in the village, in the traditional village, it's equal. So it was this English thing of the Victorian woman that came out of, you know, Victorian woman had to stay in the kitchen and be there, and the man was in charge. It's that concept that seems to have also played a role in where we are today. So it's not traditionally African. I know a lot of African men have also taken on quite nicely to this spot, but it's not really, I think, where it comes from. But it's difficult to get to the real facts, but that is how it seems to be. Thoughts?
Thank you. I'm just taking in a lot of what both of you have spoken about and how much it also resonates with my experiences in the world. And I think one thing that is kind of circling my head right now is a study that I recently came across, which was sharing how over the last 20 years, with a lot more women researchers starting to research bird life, there's a lot more research that's coming out that actually says the bird songs, which were traditionally known as being male bird songs, are actually existent as well in female birds as well, female bird communities. And it hasn't left my mind just because I'm thinking of how much the leadership of women is such a huge contribution to all of society, and how suddenly this thing that hasn't existed for centuries in research is now very prevalent and being recognized and acknowledged just by the presence of women scientists and researchers who are looking into these different communities across species, right? And it's making me think of, you know, myself as a young leader and how much that's changing the way I experience the world or experience leadership through the presence of leaders that are starting to occupy spaces in various industries. And yeah, I'm just still sitting with that and thinking about how transformative it is to have the leadership of the most vulnerable communities or marginalized communities and the different people that start to be seen, valued, and heard through that.
That's so important. And thank you for that point. And I want to latch onto that because you spoke about inclusion and we've been speaking to about inclusion before. But I want to take it further. Isn't it really more also about belonging? Because inclusion can often become just an advertisement, a marketing exercise. Hey, oh, we are so inclusive. Look at us, says the white male at the top, you know, and look at all the women, but they never ask the women anything. So isn't it that environment where you have the voice, where you don't have to act like the male, where you can be yourself, where your voice is important, where you can be authentic? Aren't those the sort of environments that we should be creating?
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I actually want to go back to actually one of my clients said something so profound to me. And she said to me, you know, we walk into these environments and offices and I feel like I sometimes walk in with this invisible handbag. I've got all of these different traits and personality parts of myself in this handbag. And depending on what room I find myself, I pull out this personality because I don't feel that I can bring myself to the table. And I think something gets lost when we can't show up as ourselves, as authentic women, because women are very different to men. And I actually want to read something out to you. So I don't know who of you are familiar with Faith Popcorn. So Faith Popcorn wrote a book, I think it was in the 70s or 80s, called Evolution, about women and how women are absolutely different. And the system that we're working in is very male dominant, but it's also got a lot of masculinity in it. Now, we all have masculinity and femininity in us. Now, I'm always going to be giving it to you. Okay, so my teacher... For numerology, shared something with me so profound. And I want you to think about this now for a second. Women, their sexual organs are internal, right? So everything that we experience, our emotions and how we experience things, is internal. Where men's sexual organs are external, there is a physical world. It's about the external environment. But you need both to thrive, right? To thrive in society. And Faith Popcorn explained it so beautifully. If we think about the masculine energy, right? The masculine energy is all about working through hierarchy. Now, if you look at a beehive, beehives, ant hives, whatever you want to call them, what ants, they all work in hierarchy, right? But also what makes it interesting is that women are all about collaboration. So I'll use that in context with each other. I hope you must tell me when I'm talking too much. So
we are happy.
So if you look at an ant's nest, so when I worked on the ships many, many years ago, and I was on the ships during Hurricane Katrina. It was very rough. Anyway, got off the ship, got into, it was all flooded, and I saw these little hives of ant nests, like ant rafts. Like thousands of ants, the most disgusting thing I've ever seen in my life, floating from one place to the other, and they're just floating on the water. And I completely forgot about it, and a few years ago, I researched it, and what I learned is that these ants can't swim, and they don't know how to swim. So what they did was the ants built these air pockets and like a raft. So all the male ants hold onto each other at the bottom of the raft, and then as it goes up, it's the younger generation of ants, then it's the woman and the eggs, and then it's the mother of the ant. And those rafts, the ants only live for 60 days. Those ants can live on that water for 6 months because they've learned where each other's strengths are and how collaboration and hierarchy is important. So we need to find a convergent and divergent and hold it in order for us to find balance, because the universe constitutes out of two opposites. The other thing that I want to highlight is that the masculinity, wants to know the answers. Women asks the questions. In a Harvard research study, they have found that women actually have such a big contribution towards strategy because they ask so many questions. And that actually helps to shape strategies. If we look at role identity, that's more masculine as role identity, where women find identity in roles. So this is where we need to also start rethinking how inclusion looks like, because I'm a numerologist. I am a connected marketer. I do data science. I'm a creative. I'm a podcaster. I am a wife. I am a sister. I've got so many roles that I fulfill, but I don't like to be boxed. Why? And I hate it when I am asked to be boxed. So Carmen, you are so good at so many things, but give me one thing that you're good at so I can actually understand who you are. What the future is requiring of us is to be multifaceted. It is to be an economist and an environmentalist. It is not just coming up with one skill. John Foster Pedley, Henley Business School, he has this thing where he says, what are you going to study for your MBA? Oh, no, I want to actually specialize in finance. What do you do for a living? Oh, no, I'm in finance. But why does that make sense? You want to learn something you already know. Learn something different so you can stretch your mind. Stretch, be curious. We need to learn to become Renaissance women, Renaissance men, which is polymaths. And polymaths is multiple disciplines and learning that I need to have different skills. If we can learn that we have different skills, we can all welcome that with inclusion into the workplace. Because I think that the workplace has become way too hierarchical, and what it's not making room for identity in various roles. And that's why women don't fit in, because I'm good at a lot of things. And I'm sorry, it's not arrogance. It's just women are curious and we how we put things together. I'll be very quick, but also multifaceted. Women are very, very multifaceted, where the masculine is, energy is very single-mindedness. But also the masculinity is all about destination. But then we as women are all about the journey, right? And then goal-driven versus we are always process-aware. I want to know, how does that work? How's the inner workings of things? How did you come to this idea? Why are you doing that? We ask a lot of questions, but we also need to understand those processes. And I think where we all can agree that also where there's a disconnect, especially in the world that we're living in around, everything is transaction-orientated. Nobody can have a decent conversation with anybody else anymore without knowing what's in it for me. And those value exchanges is not inclusive, and it just starts things off at the wrong foot. And where women are more relationship orientated. So we're all about interconnected and building relationships, but also the relationship between things. And that's why interconnectedness is what I believe, if we work hand in hand with our male counterparts, can you imagine what this world is going to be like? Anyway, that's me.
And that's great. And I'm going to ask you to please comment. I just want to highlight a couple of things here. So you brought out, you spoke about collaboration, and collaboration is the African way. Hey? It's a we culture. It's not an I culture. And the males at the top have often brought this I thing into it. It's about me. Hey, look at me. I've heard so often, and I'm sure many of you have heard, I've been doing this like this for 20 years. Don't come with your ideas, you know, that sort of thing. It's that I will tell you, I will do. So interesting there. But you touch on another thing, the questions. And I find that women are far better at this. We should ask and not tell. Hey? We get far better results as leaders if we ask questions. How would you like to do it? What do you think we should be doing? How are we going to get the results? Collaboration again, encouraging the collaboration, where men would just say, go and do it, you know. It's that important aspect, and it's so important. And then, of course, the other thing that's so important in the way we lead in Africa is catching people doing things right. Eh? And we are so obsessed, again, from the male ego. I will tell you a number of times that I walked into stores and I would say to the manager, how's it going? And he would say to me, France, you see that person over there? I'm going to catch them. I am going to catch them, then I'm going to fire them. Spending all that energy where so many people around are doing things right, are doing things well. And by highlighting that and by catching the people doing it right, we're creating that culture of success. Now that is, I believe, as I've seen, far easier for women to do because there's not this big ego that sits here at the top, eh? Than for certain men. They just battle with this thing of sort of having to tell people that they are so wonderful, or that they are good, or that they are excelling at something. And that's what we really so badly want. But your collaboration is exceptionally important. It's the essence of the African way, eh?
Can I add something very interesting that I learned? So I'm fascinated by choirs at the moment. Anyway, but what I learned about choirs is that when people actually start singing in harmony, and when they start singing together, their hearts start beating together. There's research study that's been done. And when you collaborate and there's no anxiety, there's actually an energy frequency that you release that actually puts everybody on the same page. So collaboration, and also the society has become so busy, has become the new dumb. So if we want to get smart again, we need to start collaborating. So it's very important.
That choir thing, unfortunately, I can't comment, because when I was 4 or 5 years old, my dream was to be a singer. That's all I wanted to be. I lived it every day. I sang to the mirror. It was my whole thing. And then I got to school and I had to do a audition for singing at the I Stedford. And the teacher said, Frans, rather stick to poetry. Eh? My first dream in my life shattered. I want to get some thoughts from you on collaboration, women leadership, the approach, even some on the belonging or the, yeah, please, let me start.
I'm thinking about when you speak of collaboration and, you know, African ways of being, I'm just thinking of the value of, I guess, embodying that Ubuntu consciousness. Yes. In the way that we do things, and the way that that's transformative as well. And I think when it comes to collaboration, when I think of it, I think there's this big capacity for also identifying people's genius that I think women bring to leadership. And I think it's pretty essential for like effective teams, because I think traditionally leadership has been seen as, if you're the leader, you have to excel at everything. When really sometimes as a leader, what you need to bring to the table is a great capacity for identifying people's genius and a great capacity for facilitating the space for people to show up as their best selves. And yeah, that's really where I'm at.
And that is so important. You know, I always say you must allow others to find their own excellence. It's not about us telling you what you should be, or because we think you should be like that. But it's that, and especially again on our continent and as leaders and in our environments, is making, and isn't that what makes you the powerful leader or the better leader, is if you've got all these people that are fulfilled and have found their own voices and enjoying what they're doing, working with you, you know, rather than for you and following instructions. So important. Thank you for that.
I absolutely agree with this point. And what I want to add to what she's spoken about is that, you know, Ubuntu usually, you know, as South Africans especially, will say Ubuntu, and it's really high level, right? You are, I am because you are. But how do we embody it? How do we really live it? And I think women leaders carry it so well, right? When you think about how do you exemplify the Ubuntu essence in how you work with people, you said it, women are, it's easy for us to compliment others. We identify the talent, but we also are able to give good feedback, actionable feedback, right? That helps people grow. What I think leaders need to know is that, you know, if we had to spell it out, leaders need to know that they can leverage on relationships. Women love other. In fact, if someone saw your a beautiful shoe, they'd tell you, like, hey, I love your shoe. Then they find out that you actually are an accountant. They're like, oh, you need to help me with my taxes. And there's the relationship, right? And they inspire excellence as well, right? And in inspiring excellence is because they see the beauty in others. And often society wants us to compare each other as women, right? But the nice thing about women is that we kind of can tell when that intuition factor comes in. You can tell when the energy is right and when the energy is not. And often when the energy is right, women are able to actually speak about the excellent work that other people do probably some of you have brought stuff or bought stuff that you heard another woman say it worked well for them. Whether it worked or not for you, you're not going to go back and say, it didn't work for me. You're going to be like, oh, it's a good product, right? Because women have that energy, right, to do that. But also they can be known to take time with their decisions. And it's not because they are indecisive in their nature, but it's because when all the information makes sense, at the right time, they're able to make sustainable decisions. I like to believe that women have a foresight, whereas, as we've spoken about now, decisions are made currently in corporate to fix the short-term bottom line. But women have a sense of understanding a longer-term horizon to see what kind of factors could influence the decision many years from now. And I think that's just an inherent thing that we have, but perhaps aren't confident enough to speak about. And then when we also then think about the other E in leader, and it goes hand in hand with R for relationships, is that women are able to engage, right? At a deeper level, high level, also can be fluff, right? But engagement means caring about the other person, understanding in your teams, how are you? How are your kids? How's school? How being interested in the people that you work with. And what that does, it brings back that authenticity, right? When people are able to know that in my space, they understand me to be, to have either self-diagnosed or not, ADHD, or dyslexia, or any other, right? But you're able to, people are able to show up as their best self to produce the kind of work. I think leaders underestimate how people will actually do the best of their best that they can do. And I think you want to be in an environment where there was possibly nothing else you could put in this cake to make it more beautiful. And that's the people you want to work with. And it's if you're an aware leader or self-aware leader, those are some of the qualities you should have to be able to bring out that excellence in people and compliment.
I fully agree. And you know, you make such an important point. It's that long-term vision. Huh? Mm-hmm. I always say that at the moment on the African continent, as business, in every decision we make, we must ask, is it good for the youth of Africa and is it good for the continent? Mm-hmm. That should be part of our strategy. It is that sustainability that we want to build it. And you're so right. In my experience, I see that far better handled by women than by men. You know, there is that deeper insight into things. And just on your on the authentic leadership, I always say, you know, in isiZulu, before I get there, three things as authentic African leaders. In isiZulu, we say sawubona when we greet, and that means I see you. And as authentic leaders on the African continent, we should see each other. When we greet, we should see you. We should acknowledge you. We should say that you are good, that you have the voice, that we respect you. It is exceptionally important because on our continent, as you know, with women and other groups, it has been a respect issue to a great extent. You know, there's a lack of that. And then secondly, it's Ubuntu. We have to be there because we are. I am here because of you. You are here because of us. We can't do this without being collaborative and interconnected. Eh? And then lastly, as authentic African leaders, we must Kaluma Sani and Siyabamba Sani. Eh? We work together and we talk together. That's how we do this thing. We find results together. And again, it's the deep African way. Eh? Africa has the most beautiful values. And I just believe that women demonstrate them better than men, because it's so white dominated and it's so sort of, but there is this whole thing of, you know, we respect nature. Just one thing, if you think about the grandmother, now in my travels on the continent, I always ask young people, who's the most important person in your life? Often, 9 out of 10 times, my grandmother. Grandmother tells the stories. Grandmother shares wisdom. Grandmother is that person that is for the good in the village. Eh? And what do we do here where I live in the suburbs? When mother gets 60, 70, our old age home, eh? It's nice there. They're going to play you music. You can dance. We'll visit. And we forget. Whereas in the African culture, that wisdom is treasured. It's part of, it's the fabric of the society. Hey? Beautiful, beautiful stuff that's often not understood by men. Hey? And I am talking too much. How much time have we got left?
20 more minutes,
let's go. Okay. Okay, I have. So, Carmen. So, tell me a bit more.
So what I really want to touch on, I mean, I want to touch on a few things that's been mentioned within the panel that I'm deeply reflecting on at the moment. The first one is we're talking a lot about intuition. Now, I want to just take it back a second. If we look at us as women, right, do you know that our senses, or how many senses do you think there is? Is it about how many? So that's 60 or 7 different senses. We always refer to 5 senses. Now, there's research studies that actually prove that women are more sensory heightened, right? So that means is our information that we take in is far, far bigger. Now, if you connect sensory, it's deeply connected to intuition and it's energy and motion. So we as women are far more intuitive. We feel things a lot more. Because we are internal. And one thing in our research study that we're finding a lot, which is really bothering me, is this whole concept about women are still being told that they're too emotional. Yet this world is requiring of us to be emotionally intelligent and we need to bring the soft skills to the table. But we're still being told we're too emotional. So what we're actually doing is we're putting emotions into boxes. Once again, the multifaceted now goes away again. So emotions are going back into boxes. We should find room and space and psychological safety so that we can show up with our intuitions. How many times, and I mean, I can speak with foresight intelligence, where you say, I don't think that's a good idea. And you say it, oh no, you're being oversensitive. You shouldn't think that. You're being really over emotional. This thing happens and then you go, I told you so. Sorry. So what's happening is we as women don't feel heard because we can't bring our intuitions to the table. Now, one thing is if we need an army of critical thinkers to shape the future.
You're just being
emotional, right? So what thinking do we need to bring? Convergent thinking and divergent thinking. So we need to bring intuitive thinking to the table. We can't create a future and be critical thinkers without intuitive thinking. And there's some sort of shame that we've created around intuition. And I think that is the thing that we need to learn. I call it gut vesting, where we really need to start developing. I mean, I do the craziest things with my husband. I feel so sorry for the man. Like I will say, I give him red balls, green balls, and orange balls or whatever. And I said, hold it behind your back. He says, why am I doing this? I just want to guess what color what you're holding. Like I'm working on my intuition. I'm developing it, right? But I mean, it's like, it's creating a almost like an intuitive chamber needs to be in organizations where it's welcomed. The other thing is that what I'm also feeling at the moment is that we as women have lost our identity. And I'm going to tell you why I think this. We have been erased out of history. We have no references to go back 1,000 years, maybe a year and there. But we've really lost our identity. And we're trying to find it. And what's happening is we are continuously investing in everybody around us in search of belonging and in search of who we are as women. And this requires of us as women to be bolder, to work on our personal brands, to put ourselves out there, to get ourselves in the room so that we can rewrite history. If we are not in those decisions, if we are not making those decisions, because we need to reshape ethics, we need to reshape how decision-making is done. It's like women can feel, they can tell you there's men behind this brand. It's feeling way too sterile. I mean, the research study I'm doing is with numerology. I'm putting numerology in there because I actually feel that research studies out there has become so sterile. It doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't feel like that data represents me. And the thing is that we are making decisions off that data and doing research studies that feel so sterile that doesn't really represent who we are. And then we are building and shaping a future and then selling to them and forcing people and manipulating them through neuroscience to buy things they don't want because fundamentally we don't understand our intuitions
And fundamentally, we're not doing research correctly. It's masculine. It's not masculine and feminine. Anyway, I digress. That's my view.
Yes, and a good view. And I just want to touch on this emotional thing. You know, I find it so irritating. But sometimes you must understand when people feel threatened, when they feel and they see there are women leaders that are making great decisions, they start feeling a little bit insecure. And then they grapple with straw. You know, it's this last thing. Oh, well, but they're emotional. Hey, let's just blame that on them. And that sort of thing. And it is exceptionally irritating and it's immature. Right? And as you say, with emotional intelligence, some last thoughts just on the various ones.
So I do want to share something that as we were speaking just came across my mind to just remind me of, you know, we going into this world where it's woman empowerment, woman this, come girl power that, and sometimes it does die down, right? You get into corporate and you're like, well, I'm on my own here already. But this lady, Cindy Mabaso, I think, was on a podcast and she shared that her son was in matric and gearing up to become head boy, head girl season. And at their school, they decided for that year, they were going to call it executive, right? And then they said they're no longer doing head boy, head girl. They're going to be just have a CEO and then have the executive committee. And he came home depressed. He's like, oh, mom, I don't think I stand a chance with those girls. Have you seen the girls? The girls are doing things. And he says to her, you know, I know for a fact that I would beat the boys because he excels at what he does. But he wasn't sure of himself in terms of the girls. And the advice she gave, well, the sister gave him was that you're going to be an incredible deputy to this lady if you are aware of your abilities that you bring to, it's not a competition. Once she's declared CEO and you're the deputy, it's not a competition for who's in authority. She's in authority and the best thing you can do is be her ally. Support her views, encourage, challenge the thoughts so that you get to the right solutions that you're trying to solve. And he came home to say, actually, I'm enjoying being a deputy because I don't have to feel like that responsibility belongs to me of making sure that these new leadership titles and have that representation of a woman leader be present in the school, because usually it's boys that will take up the leadership scale. But another thing that I wanted to share about men allies is that, you know, there's another lady who was a CEO of one of the Fortune 500 companies. And she said, you know, she loved what her male leader did for her from when she was young. She stepped into the organization. He loved her work, recommended her for projects, made sure she got into executive, trusted her when she didn't even believe in herself. And while she was chasing, she realized that she was so afraid to disappoint him that she forgot about starting her own family. So she pushed back what is naturally required of us for the future generation. I mean, these days, the solutions for it, right? You can freeze your eggs when you're in your 20s and delay when you're going to become a mother. But in her time, she felt that she could have started a family, but because she felt the pressure of not disappointing the airlineship, because she's getting all of these opportunities, you don't want to feel like you're not taking them. And I think maybe, you know, Franz, you could share what challenges men go through in supporting women where you want to see more representation of women, but, you know, there are these demographical challenges that happen because by age 35, naturally, some women can't have children for themselves. They probably need, medical support. But you want to be able to say, I've contributed to their success without having to pressure them to making that choice.
And you know, that's a very important aspect again, because we need to, you know, we must get rid of these things that we are different because you are, we do it because male, female, and sexual orientation and whatever it is. We always want to box people differently. It is about this collaborative team that's going to make it work together, and they all come with different attributes. Eh? And we love those differences, but we have to allow. So I need to know you as an employee. I need to know what's important for you. I need to know that you have children at home that's important. I need to know that in this case, maybe there's a husband that's not as supportive as he should be. I had a wonderful young woman working with me much, and she said, "Franz, don't worry." I said, "But your family?" She said, "Don't worry. I've delegated that to my husband, and he knows he'll get into trouble if he doesn't do it, you know." So there's that aspect as well. But I just think mature leadership, and as we spoke, that women have so much more of, is about understanding the people who work for you, finding their excellence, allowing them to grow in the environment by understanding what their challenges are. And by understanding what they need to grow, hey, what support we need to give. So I can't just say, well, there's a room of women, we must do the following for all of them. Because there are differences within that room as well. Hey? Mm-hmm. But I need to be aware as a leader. I need to understand. I need to make it it should be my leadership is about allowing my people to excel in this environment that I am assisting in creating. And I think that's the most important, this aspect of allyship, is that understanding, eh? And that knowing. And it differs from person to person. But it's also about fighting the fights, eh, with the other men. Because I have sat in rooms, all male board meetings, where it is said, "Oh yeah, Franz, well, maybe we can promote her. She's just like us, eh? That one is okay. The others, I wouldn't." You know, it's that sort of thing. And then we have to fight those fights. If we are there in that environment where there's still, hopefully not anymore today, but where there's almost no women representation, hey? And speak on behalf of, but speak from a point of understanding and knowing who you are representing, hey? If that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
Okay. Some last thoughts there.
I think I'm thinking of two things. I'll start with, I guess, the power of spaces like this in affirming our womanhood.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of just how much in the fight to become more successful and so forth, sometimes there can be a desire to distance yourself from the traditional woman and try to become more stronger, desensitize yourself and so forth. And even in the efforts to do that, I think it's hard to escape the challenges of being socialized as a woman, regardless of how you try to distance yourself, perhaps from that womanhood and the traditional stereotypes and so forth. When you're in the boardroom and you're sitting there and you're a leader and there's men around you, you are going to still be, you know, put in a box and seen a certain way. And I'm just thinking of how much spaces like this are playing such an important role in affirming womanhood, but also making more people aware of the challenges that we're stacked up against. I'm thinking of when I met Carmen at the table for 12 and just how much, you know, I'm not a mother, but there were mothers at the table and speaking about all these challenges that they're experiencing in their corporate environments. And you start to think yourself, oh my goodness, that is something I would have not known or I would have not been able to prepare for myself if I had not been in this room. And so I'm just really thinking about the roles that women in leadership, women in diverse spaces can play in affirming other women's womanhood and also reminding them that all of whatever they're desiring is still possible regardless of your womanhood, right? It's not a barrier from pursuing whatever it is you're desiring to pursue. And I'm also in that same thought thinking about the traumas of being socialized as a woman, and also how that can be a barrier to achieving the things that you're wanting to achieve or building a community of women where you can affirm each other in the way that you are wanting to. Because there is a lot of male-dominated spaces that are saying there's only room of one of you at this boardroom table. And I'm thinking about how we can also start
you know, healing that part of ourselves that has been told that there's room for only one of us, and starting to open up the tables and remembering that there is actually room for more of us, abundantly so. And there's a power in whatever leadership role you are, whatever spaces you're occupying as a woman, in opening up doors to more women and not being intimidated by other women being in the space, same space with you, but actually remembering that there's power to more of us being in those spaces and in that collaboration with, you know, men beyond the binary, but also, you know, with other women who are just like you, because there's something about advocating for a breastfeeding table in spaces with other women versus doing it alone. So yeah, I think that's just where I'm at.
And I agree with you so much. It is that collaboration again. It's women collaborating for better understanding, for better environment, and for success. Eh? And then, of course, the other thing we're seeing that is so, so great to see is a number of women starting their own businesses, eh? And doing exceptionally well, building their own empires on their terms. Eh? But it is in the sharing, in that information sharing and coming together and having the conversations. Well, those conversations are so important always, because we learn through conversations. We learn from each other, which is so great. Some last thoughts.
I think from my perspective, just in entrepreneurship, I think that is also one thing that I've noticed a lot around corporates, is the lack of support of women empowerment for entrepreneurs and making them part of the conversations. I feel like there's such a cliche around women in corporate, but the interesting thing is that eventually when you're in your 40s and 50s, you are going to start your own business and then you're going to want to learn about it. And I think that those conversations is like, if you want to, you know, businesses can learn from MPOs and MPOs can learn from businesses. You need to start putting them together, because they're a way of look how they look at complexity and problems is very different, because it's grassroots level versus boardroom level. And you want to start shifting things from boardroom to living room, where you can have equal conversations, where everybody is working towards the same audacious goal. And I think for me, that is something that I feel a lot more work needs to be done, because I am an entrepreneur and I will not change that, because I cannot see myself fitting into a corporate. I like to zigzag. I go in and I go out and then I feel comfortable. No problem sitting on a board or doing all of those nice things. That's fine. But I want to still feel like I have autonomy and that I can make decisions based on my value system, because I feel that there's a part of me that feels like I get lost, but I'm also a very independent, like, thinker in terms of that. But I think from my perspective, just listening to that, I'm not a mother, right? But I also think what's important is the exclusivity that we experience who are not mothers, where there's this thing about, you know, I said to my husband the other day, nobody is asking me lately if I have children. I wonder what's happened. Do I look like I'm too old now to have children? Like, why am nobody asking? Because that question I had 3 or 4 times a day, and it was just not acceptable to say, I actually don't feel maternal. I don't feel like I want to be a mother. And I think that there's this massive, and I'm experiencing that, you know, from a family dynamics, is that there's a perception because you are single or you don't have children that you have more time and you can do more things and that you don't have life difficult and that you don't have challenges. And it's almost like ostracizing that dynamic. And I think that we as women also need to start including women who are also different in that regard. And especially you'll see that with the LGBT qua. So, you know, I think that it's, we need to start thinking about, you know, what that conversations look like with or without children, because that conversation is also starting to become very prevalent in the times that we live in, where many people don't want to have children, but we still want to come together as a community. It doesn't make me different in that way. I'm still a woman. You know what I mean?
Indeed, indeed. And so multifaceted, eh? Mm. Multifaceted. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to all of you, and I always learn, and I'm grateful for that. And just from my side, as closing, it's not an easy journey, I understand. And but it is about the journey. Eh? And so enjoy and take the place and make this continent what it should be. And I am really, really convinced that that's in the hand of our women leaders. Eh? So a big thing there, but it's been a pleasure. And thank you for allowing me in to talk with you and to... Thank you.
Thank you very much, panelists. That was very insightful. Obviously, I'm not going to let you go as yet. People might just have questions, but on a personal side, and this question is for Ika, what are your thoughts, or where do you see women in leadership in the next 5 to 10 years? How does that look like for you?
You know, with the new ways of work, that's a very interesting question, right? And my view is that with the flexibility that's come in and being accepted slowly
by corporates, taking it in stride, I think we're going to see more women entrepreneurs start up their own consultancies, their businesses, and provide the skills that they are providing currently as professionals in the consulting basis, in the consulting space, because women do thrive in flexibility. The way the ways of work have been created is that you are kind of like boxed into this 9 to 5. But not generally, right? Because then you can actually some days work more than that. And I think because we are curious beings, we like to do different things at different times. When I started working in corporate, I never used to tell people for my love of flowers creating. I was like, no ways. That I do wedding flowers, you would never hear me talk about. But I think as I grew older, I realized that that is my creative outlet. In fact, when my work stresses me, I prefer to do that work and see someone smile over a flower, bouquet, or box of flowers. And that's because we are this multifaceted people. So in 5 years' time, I think we'll have more women, especially in our country. If you think about where we come from in terms of COVID-19, when we were in national lockdown, firstly, it was women who struggled the most to get jobs because most of the work that they do is care type of work. And with no contact, they couldn't generate proper income. And as we came up from that, we realized that women still don't get the right financing for their businesses, for even personal, right? And so that need for independence for women is still quite interesting. I was looking for a credit a few months ago, and I was surprised that I was still asked for my spousal approval. I'm like, honestly, like, I'm the one who needs to pay right now, and I can tell him later, you know? But those systems are still there. So women in terms of financing, either personally or business, is still quite a struggle. And you think about the unemployment numbers that came up. It's more women who are unemployed. And so that need, hopefully, with the right, you know, communities such as ours like this and right investors, we can actually fund women who start their own businesses, because we want to go beyond the starting a business for survival and get to starting a business for industry. And I think that's where we'll see. Also, the young generation don't like the type of stringent, strict rules that corporate has. And so their way of working, and they've entered into the workplace, is also forcing entities to provide that flexibility.
Indeed.